There are handshakes there out in the middle. And Australia go two up in the battle for the Ashes. Two up with three to play.
Yeah, couldn't have asked for more. I thought we were pretty good with the ball in the first innings. And then to get the lead that we did with the bat and then do a really good job. I think Ness was phenomenal tonight. So, a very good week for us. Obviously, had a bit of a break after the West Indies. It was probably the longest break I've had where I haven't had where it's not from a force from an injury. So, had some really good time to put back in my body. Obviously, had the build-up through the one-day series and the Shield game, and sort of felt like something wasn't clicking right. It felt really close, but didn't quite feel like it was clicking until probably the main session before the Perth test, and it just felt like it was ready to go. So, really pleased with how it's been.
You know, again, I think looking back on this game and something that I sort of can take a little bit of sort of, stuff happening over and over again, and it's the moments in games where the game is in a moment of it's neither here or there. And Australia have managed to get through those periods, whether they've got the bat in the hand or the ball in the hand, and outdo us. And that seems to be, you know, the constant theme, not only in these first two games, but over a long while. So I can stand here and say I know it's not down to a skill thing because of the players we've got in that dressing room. They're all incredibly talented players. They've shown that on numerous occasions. But if you can't put it down to a skill thing, then you start to wonder, what is it? Do we need to start thinking about what mentality we're taking into those pressure moments? Because when we're on top, we're great. When we're behind the game, we're also very good. But when that moment of the game is neck and neck, we're not coming out on top on enough occasions to be able to challenge a team like Australia. And there's going to be some conversations going on in the dressing room that I'll keep to the dressing room. I fully back my players that we're able to bounce back from this and deliver what we need to deliver over the next three games. Because what else are we supposed to do? We're 2-0 down, we've got three games left. We know we've got to win them.
The unmistakable voice of the England captain, Ben Stokes. Before that, Mitchell Starc. We had Mitch's Ashes in 2013-14 with Mitch Johnson. I think we're getting a sequel, Mitch's Ashes, i.e. Starc, the sequel in 2025-2026. It's great to have Jason Gillespie on board to chat through the week that we've had since the Gabba and Dizzy. First and foremost, if the Queensland Tourism Commission hasn't at least bought the England team an ice cream or something over the last week to thank them for all the publicity, because has anything happened other than Noosa this week? It's been Noosa, Noosa, Noosa. How are you?
I'm great, Q. Thanks for having me, and hello to all our listeners. The Tourism Commission to be licking their lips, so to speak. It's just been, you're right, Noosa, Noosa, Noosa. And there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of criticism, hasn't there, about the England side having a little mini break. I don't actually have a problem with them having a break. I think that's absolutely fair and absolutely reasonable. I think, Q, where the criticism or questioning has come in has been, I think the fact that they played a two-day test in Perth and then they chose not to go and get some practice under lights in Canberra against the PM's 11. And then they've come and trained in Brisbane, lost that game. So that's where I think the criticism has lied in. But as for having a little mini break just to refresh and regroup, I don't have a problem with it.
Look, there's a number of angles to look at the week, and I'm just going to park that for a moment because I've asked our listeners, I'll go with you straight up. We know that Nathan Lyon's going to play, Pat Cummins is going to play. So yeah. There's two changes. Do we get the third change? Do you have Usman Khawaja in your 11 on Wednesday?
Not for me, Q, no. I will say that I think it will happen. Just all the noise coming out of the Australian camp would suggest that is a distinct possibility. I'm not sure that's a necessary positive move. Usman's been unbelievable for Australia for such a long time, but I think that it's come a point in time we've seen the two openers have performed well and in Brisbane. I don't see why there's necessarily a need to change that now.
Okay, so you've been in the building of discussions around an incumbent who has been injured and then is ready to go again against the, you know, greatest currency, which is runs and form and let's get our best team. So I think the intrigue of the general cricket fan in Australia, Jason, is, you know, How does that work? And particularly in this team, which really has redefined the way that that Australian cricket teams have. You had sort of selectors that sat outside and sort of gave the team to the captain and off you went. But this seems very different under Andrew McDonald and Pat Cummins. I'm so intrigued as to what those conversations would be like around Aussie this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm included in that. I think everyone is. And I really like their collaborative way they do things. You know, I know George Bailey's copped a little bit of criticism in some parts for almost like being too close to the team and too close to the players. I don't necessarily see that as a negative. As long as the hard conversations are able to be had, but if they're having collaborative discussions on what's best for Australian cricket, that they all want what's best for Australian cricket. So I don't actually have a problem with that. Look, I think that the question you pose is, you know, I think that it does centre around, it will centre around whether the selectors feel, Pat Cummins, Andrew McDonald and George Bailey, if they believe Usman Khawaja is in the best six batters in the country, then the likelihood is he'll play. And whether he opens or bats in the middle order, the way Pat Cummins and Andrew McDonald talk, batting orders are almost irrelevant. So if they think he's in the best six batters, that's how they'll structure up. They'll have him in that side. I think the debate is whether Usman now is actually in the best six batters in the country. I still think one of the best six batters in the country is not actually in the conversation at the moment. That's Nathan McSweeney. But that's a whole other point. He got 220-odd not out in the Aussie A game against the Lions at AB Field last week. So, you know, he's all, after making his test debut last summer, he's kind of fallen off the radar from a selection point of view in the Australian side. So, which is, you know, and Inglis has seemed to have leapfrogged him. So that's another interesting way of looking at things, because what they're saying, I mean, this is where it's really interesting. Jake Weatherall's been picked as a specific opener, but all the rhetoric that comes out of the Australian camp is that you can bat in different positions. So they clearly see Jake Weatherall as one of the best six batters in the country. So it's going to be interesting to see which way they go.
Jason Gillespie with you on Summer Grandstand already. Greg from Ryan's Ride has texted, drop Usman. Rod from Canberra texts, loyalty comes with form. The new openers are getting the job done. And yeah, that's certainly a question that has been around Australian cricket fans off the back of, look, you know, we certainly can talk about whether or not Usman Khawaja is in the best six batsmen in the country. It is probably more subjective than objective, but he was at the start of the series and hasn't had a chance to do anything otherwise because of injury. So
yeah,
that's the mystery of it for me, whether or not Australia, within reach of the Ashes, goes back to plan A because it's working. I mean, they're 2-0 up. Or, hold on, we got 2-0 up because we were forced by a turn of fate to do something a bit different, which has really allowed us to get to this position.
Yeah, and the point you make, Q, about Usman being injured at the start of the series, he was seen as one of the best six options country, and he's been injured. That's an absolutely fair point. And but I think where the waters get muddied, so to speak, to use a term of phrase, is that the Australian team has performed twice now without a contribution from him over four innings now. And so that's where the question comes for mine. Let's bear in mind there was a lot of conjecture about Usman Khawaja's spot in the side probably for the last year or so as well. Besides he made that wonderful double 100 in Sri Lanka on a low, slow surface against Sri Lanka. But there, I suppose the question marks have been against him, against high pace, both here in Australia and abroad. And I don't think he's answered those questions as to whether he's dominating that style of bowling.
Dan asks, how much does fielding count for? Not sure that Usman is in the best 60 fielders in the country.
He's got good hands, Usman, yeah, at slip, but he's probably a little bit limited in the field. But he to be fair to him, he spends most of his time tucked away at 1A there at first slip.
Yeah, and is there a world where he doesn't open yet plays? We've even heard that talk this week. I wouldn't think that he would bat elsewhere if he is in the team. Surely he opens.
Well, Andrew McDonald left the door open for him to bat anywhere. So, and I think they're very open to that. Pat Cummins has been quoted as saying batting orders in his view are overrated. Batters should be able to bat anywhere. So, I don't think it's out of the realms of possibility that if Usman plays, he structures up in the middle order.
You can have your say on 0467 920 222. Please send us your name and where you're texting from on this Saturday of Summer Grandstand on ABC Sport. Quentin Hull with Jason Gillespie. So, Des, I think I can give you three of the four specialist bowlers for the next test. Your job is to choose the other. Cummins, back into the team. Lyon, back into the team. Mitch's Ashes moves to Adelaide. So, Stark's there. Who's the fourth bowler?
Yeah, and this is a good discussion. I think everyone concedes that, you know, with Cummins and Lyon coming back into the side, I think everyone is accepting that Brendan Doggett's probably the one to make way there, at least. And the other discussion, you know, a lot of people are thinking Michael Nisa would make way, which I think that's the way it will go. However, I think there will be a discussion on whether Scott Boland has a rest. They play Michael Nisa and then Scott Boland's fresh, ready to go for the Boxing Day test. So that would be a conversation I think that's had, but I think Andrew McDonald has put an end to that speculation. He's all but said that Scott Boland will be in the side for this test match. So it appears that Doggett and Nisa will be the ones to make way for mine.
And so much of the focus has been on England, and we'll get to them in a moment, we're still probably, as an Australian collective following, a little nervous about looking at how the skipper runs in. I mean, he's been doing lots of work, Pat Cummins. We trust the work behind the scenes. But, you know, you've lived both lives, Jason. As a bowler, you lived the life of, I've got to go bowling club cricket, state cricket to be even thought of higher honours. Whereas this is different now. You've managed, as a coach, bowlers doing that simulation away from the centre wicket. So is it a fait accompli that, you know, we see the best of Pat Cummins in this test match?
Look, I think he'll be fine. I think Pat's very clear in, you know, what he feels he needs to prepare. And I think there's a lot of trust from the selectors, from Andrew McDonald, his coach, that, you know, Pat will be able to do what he needs to do to be right. And, you know, Pat Cummins won't play for Australia if he doesn't feel he's ready to go. Let me make that very clear. He won't jeopardise the team for his own self-interest. You know, he's not that type of character. Look, I think, for me, in an absolute ideal world, you'd get an actual cricket match in. But, you know, we don't live in an ideal world, and there's, you know, precious little matches to be done. They feel they can get his workloads up adequately enough to play. But for me, the bowling for me is fine. I think it's the time spent on feet. And that's so when you play a match, you field as well. And you bat and you run between wickets, you chase balls in the field, you do all that, and you're on your feet for 3 2-hour sessions. And that for me is the, and being able to back that up the next day as well. So that's why they say time on your feet, get a game under your belt, get overs under your belt, all these buzzwords and buzz sayings that we have in our sport. It just means time on feet. And if they feel they can get Pat Cummins enough time on his feet in practice simulations, practice environment, then all systems go as far as I'm concerned.
Jason Gillespie with you on Summer Grandstand. The message is pouring in. I'll read a few here. Frank texts. G'day, Frank. He says, hi, fellas. Usman was initially selected and only didn't play due to injury. He's an incumbent batter and should not be considered dropping him.
That's a good point, isn't it?
Yeah. He follows saying, Usman's experienced and proven. He should also be given an opportunity to elect to retire like others before him. I don't know whether I agree with the second half of the text as much as I agree with the first half.
I'm with you, Q. I agree wholeheartedly with Frank. First half of the text, you make a very good point, Frank. Second half of the text, disagree.
Tony from Wynnum in Brisbane says, hi, guys, if Khawaja plays, then they lose. What happens then? Win the Ashes, then give him a game? Yeah, all of these questions. Mark in Sydney, I think if Australia bat first innings of the match, Usman will open. And if they bat in the second innings of the match, it will be head to open with Weatherall. This is not silly, but this is the new world which we would have never considered before, Jason. I mean, I read that, Mark, and immediately my head's thinking, like, that is a possibility, but we never would have considered it before, would we?
No, we wouldn't. But there has been, I suppose, history of that. I know when I played quite a while ago now, if we were ahead of the game and say we batted first and we then scored runs and got a lead of 150 and we wanted to move things on, there are a number of occasions where Adam Gilchrist actually came in at three to push the scoring rate along to allow us time to then bowl out the opposition in the second inning. So there has been changes to batting orders throughout cricket history. So, you know, it's not an outlandish suggestion by any stretch.
Personally, I'm plugging for Mitchell Starc to go up the order as night watchman, Jason. You know, so...
I mean, he'd be more a night hawk, I think. Yeah. He'd be a bit more positive than other night watchmen that have gone before him.
Well, you know, we've done the night watchman thing, scoring big scores if they get given the chance, but he's still yet to get that test century despite him batting so well. In Brisbane, a couple of others... here's one from Scott in Hobart who texts, gee, the only way to get out of the Australian 11 is you either get injured or go into a nursing home. This bloke is 39. Let's blood some of our young openers. They must be so frustrated listening to this. Yeah, you know.
Look, we don't want to be ageist, Q, but I think, and I'll make the point I've made before, I think... let's not look at it in isolation in these last couple of years, the fact that he's injured now. Let's look over the last 18 months, him against fast bowling. I think the conversation should have been done well before now, well before this series even began, about his future in the test side.
Let's flick it to the English. And boy, haven't they been under the flamethrower this week, or perhaps just under the Noosa sun, to be a little bit more precise. You said that they're entitled to a break. I think, you know, we're getting to a point as well of the mind games on tour, and you can talk about cricket preparation and how you do it in the modern game, and, you know, obviously performance is the ultimate currency. But, you know, if you're the England camp and you think, boy, hold on, we're 2-0 down, we're about to have 3 days off, this is not a good look, is it worth tweaking things? When is reactive positive rather than a negative when it comes to the scenario we've seen this week with the way that the press have hammered the Poms?
Look, it's a real tricky one. I mean, I've said it. I don't have a problem with them having this break. I think the messaging out of the camp, the England camp, could have been better, Q, to be perfectly honest. You know, it's come from some of the comments that have been made from the coach, from the captain and the like. Just, I think that's where they've opened themselves up to a little bit of criticism has been the messaging that's come out, saying we've overprepared for the test match. Well, everyone would argue, well, no. Yes, you've had some net sessions, but you had a great opportunity to prepare under lights with a pink cricket ball. Some of your players have never played with a pink cricket ball before. You had an ideal opportunity. You chose not to because you said it wouldn't simulate conditions that you're going to get in Brisbane because it's hotter and it's bouncier and the like. But where was that excuse before the Perth test when they played on a low, slow wicket? As they thought that was great preparation before a fast bouncy wicket at Perth Stadium. So I think the contradictory messaging that's been coming out of the England camp has opened them up for a little bit of criticism, and in this case, this Noosa trip.
What's the hometown like, Diz? Buzzing? Oh, boy. It's always great test week, but how about Ashes week?
I can tell you, Q, I was listening to your opener and you talked about the basketball that went to overtime, 36ers versus United. I was actually there last night and I can assure you the atmosphere was buzzing and we're going to get that day one of the Adelaide Test starting on Wednesday. There is a real buzz and excitement around and vibe around the town at the moment. And there's just so much excitement about what the Test week's going to look like.
And of course, Jason, get to this point of the year where you sort of got to look two ways, not only to the Ashes, but men's Big Bash starts tomorrow. We've got the women's Big Bash final tonight. Just a quick one on, can you give me a mover in the men's Big Bash this season? Can you take your knowledge of the striker's hat off and go with who do you think the mover is, remembering that the Canes men are the reigning champs and they beat the Thunder in the final last year?
That's right. So, I think the Canes are going to go close again. They're a real chance of going back to back. I'm liking Adelaide Strikers as a team. They've made some tweaks to their list, but I'm in on Perth Scorchers. I think they miss the finals. They don't miss finals very often. They missed them last year. I think they're going to bounce straight back and have a really good season. So I think expect them to go deep into the tournament. And look, you never write off the Sydney Sixers. They've got a key signing in Bubba Azam, the Pakistan superstar. I think they're going to be they're a well-led side. They've got a good, consistent squad. They'll go deep into the tournament as well.
Dizzy, thank you. And that's a very good prediction, because we've got Cooper Connolly joining us in just a moment.
Oh, perfect. tell him that I said I'm on the Scorchers train.
he's listening, so we'll get that reaction in a moment. Enjoy the countdown. Can't wait to hear you and the rest of the team on Wednesday.
Good on you, mate. Thank you.